Okay, I think most people are ready now for this sutta class. Are we doing reading out sutta number 49 this afternoon? The Brahmanimantanika Sutta. Again, it's a different type of sutta about an experience of the Buddha with literally what the person which people call God, with the great Brahma. And it's a fascinating, interesting sutta about the Buddhist conception of a being, of a God. But it also contains a very famous saying or verse which is coming later on, which I will also explain. And this verse is a controversial verse, but when you read it in line with some of the other suttas, it's very clear what it really means. So we're going to start now on sutta number 49, the invitation of a Brahma.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi.
So, Sutta 49. I do have a spare book here. Does anyone need another copy? Has everyone got a copy? Oh, great, okay. The Brahmanimantanika Sutta, the invitation of a Brahma or to a Brahma. Thus have I heard on one occasion the Blessed One was living at Sawati in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. There he addressed the monks thus. Monks, Venerable Sir, they replied, the Blessed One said this. Bhikkhus, which means monks, on one occasion I was living at Ukkata in the Subhaga grove at the root of a royal sala tree. So the Buddha usually lived out in the open. Now on that occasion a pernicious view, a wrong view, had arisen in Bhaka the Brahma thus. And the Brahma is here, not the Brahmin, the Brahma, which is like the one of the highest gods. A Brahma god, according to elsewhere, starts to live at the beginning of an eon. And in another sutta there, they say because that the Brahma god is the first actually to appear in a world cycle, and because he never knew anyone before him and he sees people coming after him, the Buddha said that was the origin of his idea that he was the creator. However, the Buddha always says that no God creates this world, it goes according to natural laws, and it was just a conceit, or rather an illusion of Brahma, to think that he was a creator, or rather it was a creator, because Brahma is gender neutral. Now this particular Brahma, Bhaka the Brahma thus, this is permanent, this is everlasting, this is eternal, this is total, this is not subject to pass away. For this neither is born nor ages, nor dies, nor passes away, nor reappears. And beyond this there is no escape. So he's talking like to an eternal, unchanging reality. This is permanent, this is everlasting, this is eternal, this is total, this is not subject to pass away. For this neither is born nor ages, nor dies, nor passes away, nor reappears. And beyond this is no escape. In other words, an ultimate reality which lasts forever, which is not born, not died. This is what we would call, in many sort of traditions, the idea of a God, of an eternal reality, of a ground of all being, or whatever else you wish to call it. So I read that out once more. This is permanent, this is everlasting. This is eternal, this is total. This is not subject to pass away. For this neither is born nor ages, nor dies nor passes away, nor reappears, and beyond this there is no escape. And according to the commentary, he held this eternalist review with regard to both his own individual personality and the world over which he presided. In other words, he's thinking, I and my world are the eternal, and this will be like the illusion of a god. And this is actually putting it quite clear, you know, an eternal god. And the Buddha actually puts it down very clear here, whatever it is he was referring to, he was saying there's something here which he was close to, either himself or the world in which he lived, as being a permanent reality. It's a God idea. Any questions about that before we carry on?
And beyond this, there is no escape.
In other words, that you can't get outside of this. There's nothing beyond this. There's nothing higher than this. That we're all in this. So you're basically, I'm the God, we're in it together, but you are under my command. You can't escape from me. As will become clear later on when the Buddha has a contest with God and we see what happens. That's a good idea. And the commentary says he was looking at this as his own personality and the world. And not this planet Earth, but the whole cosmos. And again, the Buddha said this was a pernicious view, which is a way of saying a wrong view, a deluded view. And the Buddha continues, I knew with my mind the thought in the mind of Bhaka the Brahma. In other words, that telepathy, Buddha explaining his psychic powers here. And in the usual way, so just as quickly as a strong man might extend his flexed arm, or flex his extended arm, I vanished from the root of the Rosala tree in the Subhaga Grove at Ukata and appeared in that Brahma world. Again, using the psychic powers of a meditative monk to actually appear in those realms. There are many realms, and these aren't theories. There's great monks in the time of the Buddha, or some even now, go off and visit those realms. Those realms are not to be considered sort of, you know, physically high, you know, above some cloud somewhere. Even these days in our Western culture, if you look at the cartoons, you always see the angels living in clouds. But anyone who's been up an aircraft, I've been up there so many times, whenever you pass through the clouds, I've never seen any angels sitting on those clouds, and neither has anybody else. But nevertheless, that's just an old idea. But the point being here that these aren't realms of the physical world. In the Deva realms, as it says very clearly in the teachings of the Buddha, these are manomaya realms. Mano means mind, maya means made, constructed. So these are mind-made realms. They don't live in the physical realm. They're literally made of mind stuff. They're created by mind. But they have a reality as real as the physical world here. So they don't live in the physical world. They're in the huge territory of what we call the mind realms. Is that okay? Because to understand these realms, you have to change the perceptual framework instead of from the physical realm to the mental realm. Okay. So, because the Buddha was obviously very skilled with the realm of the mind through deep meditation, that means one can access these realms. One doesn't travel physically, one attunes the mind to those realms. And so one can go there and converse. So just as quickly as a strong man might extend his fixed arm, in other words immediately, or flex his extended arm in an act of will, knowing the muscles of the mind, I vanished from the root of the Royal Sala tree in the Subhaga Grove at Lukata and appeared in that Brahma world. Bhaka the Brahma saw me coming in the distance and said, Come, good sir. Welcome, good sir. It is long, good sir, since you found an opportunity to come here. So actually, the back of the Brahmin was actually quite welcoming, too, because very rare that beings of the human realm develop that ability to come. Now, good sir, this is Bhaka, or God, telling the Buddha, this is permanent, this is everlasting, this is eternal, this is total, this is not subject to pass away, for this neither is born, nor ages, nor dies, nor passes away, nor reappears. And beyond this, there is no escape. And that makes it quite clear in the commentary that this, in the Pali word, that this is in front of you, what you're seeing here. In other words, me. That's what he's saying there. So that God is telling the Buddha that basically I am permanent, or this person, this being, is everlasting, eternal, total, is not subject to pass away. This, in other words, me, neither born, is not born, nor ages, nor dies, nor passes away, nor reappears. Beyond this, or me, there's no escape. When this was said, I told Bhaka the Brahma, I told God, the worthy Bhaka the Brahma has lapsed into ignorance. He has lapsed into ignorance in that he says of the impermanent that it is permanent, that he says of the transient that it is everlasting, of the non-eternal that it is eternal, of the incomplete, that it is total,
of what is subject to pass away, that it is not subject to pass away. Of what is born, ages, dies, passes away, and reappears, that it neither is born, nor ages, nor dies, nor passes away, nor reappears. And when there is an escape beyond this, he says there is no escape beyond this. So the Buddha is completely contradicting the very essence of a God idea, saying this, it's not permanent, it's not everlasting, it's not total. And it's saying that you're seeing something, you know, which is subject to rising, being born, getting old, passing away, and you're just not seeing it. And one of the reasons for that is that beings who arise in those deva realms, they do not arise as little baby gods and then suddenly slowly sort of mature as human beings do, or as beings in the animal realm do. In the deva realms, one reappears fully formed. There is no real change in your appearance in the time which you're in the deva realms, except the very, very end of your lifespan. There you start to fade away, and basically very quickly, and then you just disappear. As soon as a change appears in the deva realms, you're on the edge of disappearing from there. But for the rest of the time, stay unchanging for many, many hundreds of thousands of years in the deva realms. And you can imagine that if you've been in those deva realms, the first person, and haven't seen any change in your appearance, in your being, you would obviously sometimes think that you are permanent. You haven't seen yourself dying, no other beings in there have died. You too think that death is not part of your future or destiny. You see illusion, or rather the delusion of a god. And the Buddha is telling him, look, this is ignorance. In that you're saying of the impermanent that it is permanent, of the transient that it is everlasting, of the non-eternal that it is eternal, of the incomplete that it is total, what is subject to pass away that is not subject to pass away. And so you can actually say that to anyone who sort of believes in a god. So what you're believing in, the saying of what is transient, that it is eternal. What is subject to passing away, that's always going to be there. So no, you're going into delusion. So that's what Buddha was saying here. Complete rejection of the god idea to God's face. Now let's see what happens next. Then Mara, the evil one, they call him evil, but the word evil is very much a Christian word, which means goes against God's law. In the Buddhist idea, it is this one who is malicious. And the idea of a Mara is a being who lives in the realm just below the Brahma realm. In that particular realm, it's a realm called the Paranimitta Vasavati realm, which literally means those who wield power over others' creations. It's the people who get off on power, the controllers. And you can see that the Mara is exerting his control here by taking over a member of that assembly. And remember, Mara being the controller doesn't want anyone to actually get beyond his control. Yeah. Okay, because Mara in the past had created a lot of good karma, really a wonderful person. But what happens, you can see this even with politicians, that many politicians, they begin their career in politics, they really want to serve the community. They are idealistic, they're self-sacrificing, they want to do the best for their country or their community. But when you get into that power, there's something which happens with the exercise of power. As Lord Acton said famously, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it's just the danger of power. That's why in most successful organizations, whether democracies or Buddhist societies, you have to have balances, checks and balances, which stop one person or one group exercising so much power. Otherwise, with the best will in the world, corruption happens. It always does happen. And it's not so much the fault of the individual, it's just the fault which is inherent in the exercise of unchecked power. So there's a guy, Mara,
really great person, done a lot of wonderful karma, being born in the great heaven realm, but because of the power in that realm, it leads to a corruption of that being. Is in the Karma Loka. Brahma realm, it's just right close by. It's still the Karma Loka, but the Brahma realm, the first Brahma realm actually, this is an important point, you'll see it in a few moments here. The Brahma realm is actually almost in between the Karma realm and the Brahma here and the Jhana realms. We'll see this in a moment, because in other places there is a story of this monk who wanted to finally answer the question, where do earth, air, water and fire find no footing? And he went to see the lower devas, the devas, what they call the devas of the four great kings, and they said, we don't know, why don't you go and ask the Tawatimsa devas, which were just the next level up. So he went to ask those, we don't know either, but there's another group of devas called the Yama devas, they might know. And the Yamas didn't know, but the Tusas devas, they might know. So he went up to see the Tusas devas, and they sent him up to the, what's it called, Nimadarati devas, and they sent him up to the Paranimitta devas, where Mara lives, and they didn't know, they sent him up to Brahma. And the people in the assembly of Brahma, and we see this is Brahma's assembly here, they said, well, we don't know, but Brahma, no, he would know. Where is he? So we haven't got a clue. He just appears sometimes, and the sign of his appearing is this great light, and then he comes through that light. And that's what it says in the suttas, but if any of you have got any deep meditations, you know that light, you've probably heard me say it many times because I talk about this very often, is the nimitta. It's beautiful light which appears in the mind, and that is the transition portal, if you like, to get into the jhanas. And it's quite clear when I read that in the suttas that this Brahma, which is confirmed in other suttas, so enters that jhana, and at that jhana, when he's in the jhana, he's inaccessible from anybody, and then emerges from that jhana to actually be a god. But in the jhanas, you are absolutely still, self-contained, a one with just, you know, this experience of bliss. So that Brahma, God, basically enters and goes out of the jhana realms. When he comes out, obviously it's in the Karma Loka. The Karma Loka, you can see, you can hear, you can talk, you can act. And if, you know, sometimes it's what happens, the old burning bushes in the Old Testament, of like a seeing like God sort of come out of a big flame or a big fire, some big huge light, which was also in the Old Testament idea of an appearance of a god. But that, I will come back to that in a moment when we get the contest between the Buddha and God. So Mara, this control freak in chief, I call him the control freak in chief, the people who are the chief of those who exert power over the people's creations, who get off on power, took possession of a member of the Brahma's assembly. And this, Mara, through this other being, told me, this is speaking to the Buddha, monk, monk, do not disbelieve him. Do not disbelieve him. For this Brahma is the great Brahma, the overlord, the untranscended, of infallible vision, wielder of mastery, lord maker and creator, most high providence, master and father of those that are and ever can be. Before your time, monk, there were recluses and Brahmins in this world who condemned earth through disgust with earth, who condemned water through disgust with water, who condemned fire with disgust with fire, who condemned air through disgust with air, who condemned beings through disgust with beings, who condemned gods through disgust with gods, who condemned Prajapati through disgust with Prajapati, who condemned Brahma through disgust with Brahma. In other words, who actually tried to renounce the whole lot. The earth, fire and water was like material things. But not only material things, even renouncing heavenly things. Prajapati means just like a lord. Like what's it called? Basically, pati means like a lord, or paja means of the multitude. And Gautama Brahma,
So they said, this is what some people did before, what you're trying to do. And on the dissolution of their body, when their life was cut off, they became established in an inferior body. In other words, they get reincarnated in the lower realm. Before your time, monk, there were also recluses and Brahmins in the world who praise earth, or lorded earth through delight in earth, who lorded water through delight in water, who lorded fire through delight in fire, who lorded air through delight in air, who lorded beings through delight in beings, who lorded gods through delight in gods, who lorded Prajapati through delight in Prajapati, who lorded Brahma through delight in Brahma. In other words, world affirmers who believed and praised in gods, especially the God, who delighted in the God, praised the Lord God. And on the dissolution of their body, when their life was cut off, they became established in a superior body. In other words, they go to heaven. In other words, you praise the Lord God and you go to heaven. If you don't, if you mess around, I will tell you, you go to an inferior realm. And this is God, or rather, one in God's assembly, telling the Buddha this. So remember what the context is. The Buddha is being told, praise the Lord. Yeah. Yeah. This is a very interesting one. Whether he took actually possession or whether he actually appeared in that body. Remember, these are mind-made bodies. It's all mind-made stuff. So it's not a physical body. It's not like a possession as sometimes happens. It's very rare, but it does happen on very uncommon occasions that a being takes possession of a human body. So, you know, you may have seen it in the documentaries of people's contorted faces, contorted limbs, speaking in strange voices, and then sometimes a being has taken possession of a human being. That's very, very, very rare. Most cases of possession aren't possession, but schizophrenia. But it does happen. In this particular case, Mara taking possession of such a high being, it is problematical. It could be here the idea, and it's a valid concept, that this was not Brahma, this is not Mara the being, but Mara the principle. Because that is actually used in the suttas by the Buddha. As Mara definitely is a being who lives in a realm, but it's also like a principle. In other words, if you're being really stupid, they say, that Mara's sort of taking over you. In other words, that you are exhibiting the sort of ideas and worldview which Mara has. So it's uncertain there whether that was actually Mara taking possession of a deva, or appearing as a deva, or whether it was just one of those very high devas who was acting as if he had Mara's ideas. Whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. It was just one of God's offsiders, his close associates, was basically telling him, praise the Lord, believe in God. If you don't do this, you have a bad rebirth. If you do believe in God, then you go to heaven. And then you can recognize that message today. Yes, remember, Mara is a controller. And also that Brahma is into controlling as well. So there is, so affinity between the two of them. Like a god, a creator, a controller, a wielder of power over everybody. The idea that you control a destiny, that may the will of God be fulfilled. If it's Allah's will or whatever. All of these are showing like a concept of a god which is controlling us. And there you can find out the affinity with Amara, who's also into controlling. It's controlling for controlling's sake. It's just for the. It's the same as like the people into power trips. They really think they're doing the right thing for everybody. They think they're sort of helping the world, but sometimes you just have to invade a few countries and bomb a few people. But it's the best in the long run for everybody. Some people think. And this is the problem with power. So it's also it's really making that the power which people have, they think that it's going to be for the good of others. But it usually turns out for the problem and trouble of everybody. And obviously you've heard me say this before, that's what happens in your meditation as well. When you start to exert power over your mind in meditation, try to control it, then you are like being a Mara, trying to control your breath or controlling your progress in meditation, and it all goes wrong. This is where you have to let go. Anyone who starts letting go, according to the idea of the tradition, Mara really gets very afraid. When you let go, you're going beyond Mara's realm. And if you let go into the point of jhanas, in jhanas you are now free from Mara's control, temporarily. That's where Mara cannot go. Stages of complete letting go. Because control does not exist in the jhanas. That's physical and also metaphorical. So, if you praise the Lord, you go to heaven. If you don't, you have a bad rebirth. So, Bhikkhu, says this Brahma's offsider, controlled by Mara. This is Bhikkhu here, is the Buddha. So, Bhikkhu, saying to Buddha, I tell you this, be sure, good sir, do only as Brahma says, never overstep the word of God. If you overstep the word of God, monk, then like a man trying to deflect an approaching beam of light with a stick. It's a very nice metaphor. Or like a man losing his hold on the earth with his hands and feet as he slips into a deep chasm. So it will befall you, monk. Be sure, good sir, do only as Brahma says. Never overstep the word of God. Do you not see the Brahma's assembly seated here, monk? And Mara, the evil one, thus calls... Do you not see the Brahma's assembly seated here, monk? And that was what he said. And Mara, the evil one, thus called to witness the Brahma's assembly. So this, you can actually see when you change the word from Brahma to what the equivalent word in English, which was God, that you can see just how we have the God idea in all its glory here, and all working through fear. Believe in the Lord, then you have a good rebirth. If you don't, you're in trouble. And again, if you try and overstep the word of the God monk, you'll be like trying to deflect an approaching beam of light with a stick. You're not fast enough, and you just can't do it. And the other one about slipping into a chasm, your mind looking like a man losing his grip on the earth as he slips into a deep chasm. And even in the time of the Buddha, the idea of a chasm was also synonymous with a hell realm, so they're also invoking the fear of going into a hell realm, into the abyss, the chasm, which it was a metaphor for hell in early Christianity, as well as in Buddhism. So, the Buddha has been told off, better believe in God, or else. Now, what did the Buddha reply? When this was said, the Buddha reporting to his monks, I told Mara the evil one, I know you, evil one, do not think he does not know me. You are Mara, evil one, and the Brahma and the Brahma's assembly, and the members of Brahma's assembly have all fallen into your hands. They have fallen into your power. You, evil one, think, this one, meaning the Buddha, has also fallen into my hands. He too has fallen into my power, but I have not fallen into your hands, evil one. I have not fallen into your power. So the Buddha here was just rejecting Mara. When this was said, Bhaka the Brahma, in other words, God, the boss, told me, good sir, when fear doesn't work, good sir, God is now reaffirming what Mara has just said. When this was said, Bhaka the Brahma, God told me, good sir, I say of the permanent that it is permanent, of the everlasting that it is everlasting, of the eternal that it is eternal, of the total that it is total, of what is not subject to pass away, that it is not subject to pass away, of what neither is born, nor ages, nor dies, nor passes away, nor reappears, that it neither is born, nor ages, nor dies, nor passes away, nor reappears. And when there is no escape beyond this, I say that there is no escape beyond this. In other words, he's reaffirming his position against the Buddha's words. And again, he's reaffirming what Mara just said. Before your time, monk, there were recluses and Brahmins in the world whose asceticism lasted as long as your whole life. They knew when there was an escape beyond, that there is an escape beyond, and when there's no escape beyond, that there is no escape beyond. In other words, there's other people who've just been much better than you. They knew what was right, you are wrong. So, monk, I tell you this, you will not find no escape beyond, and eventually you will reap only weariness and disappointment. However, if you will hold to earth, you will be close to me, within my domain, for me to work my will upon and punish. If you hold to water, to fire, to air, to beings, to gods, to Prajapati, to Brahma, you will be close to me, within my domain, for me to work my will upon and punish. You see, like a god actually even then, not just being a loving god, but also a punishing god as well. I know that too, Brahma, replied the Buddha. If I will hold to earth, I shall be close to you, within your domain, for you to work your will upon and punish me. If I will hold to water, in other words, attaching to these material things, to water, to fire, to air, to beings, to gods, to Prajapati, to Brahma, I shall be close to you, within your domain, for you to work your will upon and punish. I know that. But further, this is where the Buddha just trumps God. Further, I understand your reach on your sway to extend thus. Bhakara Brahma has so much power, this much might, this much influence. In other words, he knows the limit of God's power. And God was actually obviously a bit surprised by this. Now, good sir, how far do you understand my reach and my sway to extend? And the Buddha is replying here, as far as moon and sun revolve. It's in straight away here. In the Bible it says sort of the earth is stable. Doesn't moon move? Here it's saying the moon and sun revolve. Shining and lighting up the quarters over 1,000-fold such world systems. Not just one. So you know, the Buddha is actually saying 1,000-fold suns and moons and earths and stuff. Does your sovereignty extend? And there you know the high and low, and those with lust and free from lust, this state that is thus and otherwise, the coming and going of beings. Brahma, I understand your reach and your sway to extend thus. Bhakara Brahma has this much power, this much might, this much influence. Over 1,000-fold world systems. But, Brahma, there are 3 other bodies which you neither know nor see, which I know and see. There is a body called the gods of streaming radiance, from which you passed away and reappeared here. Because you have dwelt here long, your memory of that has lapsed, and hence you do not know or see it, but I know and see it. Thus, Brahma, in regard to direct knowledge, I don't stand merely at the same level as you, God. How then could I know less? Rather, God, I know more than you. Now that's, so he's saying something. He knows more than God, and obviously this is going to really piss off God in a few moments. The gods, the streaming radiance, that is the second jhana realm. Those streaming radiance gods in the second jhana realm, because this Brahma can come into the first jhana and come out again into this world, the second jhana realm does not know. And as it's said elsewhere, at the end of this universe, there's many universe cycles, the Buddha actually said, beings for the most part are reborn in the realm of the streaming radiance. Basically, they've got no choice. Going into that second jhana realm, because it is a mind-made realm, it's not at all concerned with physical stuff. which means the universe can come and go. In those jhanas, you don't know anything. In those jhanas, you can't see, you can't feel, you can't hear. The physical stuff is irrelevant to you. And when those gods or those beings in the realm of the streaming radiance, remember you can't converse with each other, you're in your own space, your own mind space. In the same way when you're in jhanas, you can't converse with each other, you're too still to have that movement called communication. When the new universe is formed, beings, the first being passes away from that realm of streaming radiance. In other words, they come out of that jhana state of mind and they get reborn in or reappear into this new universe cycle. And that is the birth of a god. However, don't realize where they've come from. Been here a long time and think that you just appeared here. You don't know what happened before you came here. Because that's your consciousness, that's all it knows. And so you have the illusion you've been here forever. The first, and therefore the controller. So, if anyone asks you, where did God come from? What caused God? And you have an answer in Buddhism. The cause of God was the passing away from the realm of the gods of streaming radiance. There was no first cause. The cause of the first cause was the passing away from the realm of the streaming radiance. So you have an answer to the first cause. It's not really a first cause. There's a cause behind that, and a cause behind that, and that, and that, and that. So, this is what the Buddha said. I know more than you. That's only just one of the gods. There's also the gods of effulgent glory, which is the third jhana realm. And there's also the body called the gods of the great fruit, which are the fourth jhana realm. You do not know or see that, but I know and see that. Thus, Brahm, in regard to direct knowledge, not theory, but your own experience, I do not stand merely at the same level as you, God. How can I know less? Rather, I know more than you. Now, the Buddha goes on and teaches some really deep dharma, not just saying I know more. Brahma, having directly known earth as earth, having directly known that which is not commensurate with the earth, earthiness of earth, I did not claim to be earth. I did not claim to be in earth, I did not claim to be apart from earth, I did not claim earth to be mine. I did not affirm earth. Here he is talking about the idea of his essence, his self, his soul, his being. Having known the first of these four elements, and let's here just join all those elements together, having no material things, know what they are, and what's not completely apart from material things, what's not commensurate with them, basically realms of mind and emptiness, I did not claim to be made of material things, to be a material soul, nor did I claim to be apart from a soul which is apart from material things, nor claim that the material things belong to me as my attribute. I did not affirm such things, affirm earth or materiality. Thus, Brahma, in regard to direct knowledge, I do not stand merely at the same level as you. How then could I know less? Rather, I know more than you about the essence of a self. Brahma, having directly known the other three elements, water, fire and air, having directly known beings, having directly known gods, having directly known Prajapati, having directly known Brahma as Brahma, the gods of streaming radiance as the gods of streaming radiance, the gods of effulgent glory as the gods of effulgent glory, the gods of great fruit as the gods of great fruit, all of these ones are the jhanas, having known these things. And I'll just say like a jhana here, having directly known like the jhanas, I did not claim to be in a jhana, I did not claim to be apart from jhana, and not, you don't enter a jhana as if it's a soul which enters these realms, this is just a state of one's consciousness, or state of consciousness rather than one's consciousness. You don't identify with these.
jhana states. So I mention that point because it is one of the traps of those deep meditations. They're so powerful, they're so wonderful, they're so awesome, they're so transcendent. It's very easy for a person who is not well instructed in the Dhamma of a Buddha to actually to take those experiences, a union with God, your ultimate reality, this is it, and then this is my essential being, the jhana experience. And wonderful thing about Buddhism is actually to show you that this is more than this, especially if you have a couple of jhana experiences, not just the first jhana. You see, my goodness, there is something more than ultimate bliss. So, here we have the Buddha actually saying that I know all these things, and I know that which is not commensurate with all these things. He goes on after the great fruit, the overlord is the overlord. Is the Adi, the overlord, I think the word is Adibhuta, like that is the most extreme, of the most subtle of being. Adibhuta. Bhuta means just like a being, and Adi means the highest. That's why in Thailand, some years ago, the Catholic Church got into trouble because we have the Sangharaja of Thailand. You know, he's the head of the Sangha. And they call the head Catholic there the Adi Sangharaja, which means that the extreme Sangharaja or the supreme Sangharaja. And that really got the Thai religious people upset. It was just like being one-upmanship. So you have the Sangharaja, but we have the supreme Sangharaja. And this is actually an idea of an overlord, that supreme being. And also, lastly, he finishes off as the all as all. It's just some concept of an ultimate entity here going beyond the idea of a being, almost like as a concept, the all as all, the whole summation of the whole of existence. Having directly known the all as all, and having directly known that which is not commensurate with the allness of all, which is not be able to be compared, which is way beyond the allness of all. We're talking here about nibbana, the cessation of everything. I did not claim to be all. You're not the cosmic consciousness. Nor did I claim to be contained in the allness of all. I did not claim to be apart from the allness of all. I did not claim the allness to be mine. I did not affirm the totality. Thus, Brahma, in regard to direct knowledge, I do not stand merely at the same level as you. How then could I know less? Rather, I know more than you, God. So the Buddha is really challenging. So this ultimate being, which may be challenging you as well, when you start to saying that all these incredible states, which were beyond even God's experience. So how much more is it beyond yours? But you can know these things through the deep meditations, as the Buddha found them out. So Brahma replies, good sir, if you claim, he's actually calling me good sir, if you claim to directly know that which is not commensurate with the allness of all, may your claim not turn out to be vain and empty. In other words, he was saying, yeah, sure. He didn't believe a word of what the Buddha was saying. And so the Buddha had to try and convince him that he knew what was not commensurate with the allness of all. And this is where he's repeated a phrase which first appears in the Digha Nikaya, and which is not well translated, but I will read the translation out here. The consciousness that makes no showing, nor has to do with finiteness, not claiming being with respect to all, that is not commensurate with the earthness of earth. That is not commensurate with the waterness of water. That is not commensurate with all these other things, including the allness of all. That's somehow different from everything. Now, this consciousness that makes no showing, again, the Buddha is actually showing here his understanding of reality far beyond the spiritual materiality of a god. Now, the anidasana vijnana, the consciousness that makes no showing, nor has to do with finiteness, nor claiming being with respect to all.
There's many commentators have said that that is sometimes very difficult for people to understand. If you understand what cessation is, the ending of things, it's very easy to understand what this is. And to give you the full understanding, I'm going to quote where the first part of this came up in the Digha Nikaya in Sutta number 11. Well, I got it out before I came in here. This is the sutta which I alluded to earlier, where the monk went to all these different types of gods and asked the question, where do all these things cease without remainder? And they said, look, we don't know, but you know, go and see the great Brahma. Okay, now I'm just going to read this out. So I'm going on a tangent here, but this is interesting. Then that monk, who's trying to find out where these things cease without remainder, by the appropriate concentration, made the way to the Brahma world appear before him. He went to the dais of the Brahma's retinue, the Brahma's assembly, what they called here, and asked them. They say, we don't know, but there is Brahma, the great Brahma, the conqueror, the unconquered, the all-seeing, all-powerful, the Lord, the maker and the creator, the ruler, appointer, orderer, father of all that have been and shall be. That's a different translation of what we just had before, but the same words in Pali. He is loftier and wiser than we are. He would know where the four great elements cease without remainder, and where, friends, is the great Brahma now? Monk, we do not know where. We do not know when, how, and where Brahma will appear. But when the signs are seen, when a light appears and a radiance shines forth, then Brahma will appear. Such signs are an indication that he will appear. As I was saying before, the nimitta arising as the Brahma comes out of the jhana realm. Then it was not long before the great Brahma appeared, and that monk went up to him and said, friend, where do the four great elements, earth, water, fire and earth, cease without remainder? To which the great Brahma replied, monk, I am Brahma, great Brahma, the conqueror, the unconquered, the all-seeing, all-powerful, the Lord, the maker and the creator, the ruler, appointer and orderer, father of all that have been and shall be. A second time the monk said, friend, I did not ask if you are Brahma, great Brahma, the Lord and all this other stuff. What I asked you is where do the four elements cease without remainder? And a second time the great Brahma replied, monk, I am Brahma, great Brahma, the conqueror, the unconquered, the all-seeing, all-powerful, the Lord, the maker, the creator, the ruler, appointer, and orderer, father of all that have been and shall be. And a third time the monk said, friend, I did not ask you that. I asked you where the four great elements, earth, water, fire, and air, cease without remainder. Then the great Brahma took that monk by the arm, led him aside and said, monk, these other gods believe there is nothing Brahma does not see. They believe there is nothing he does not know, that there is nothing he is unaware of. That is why I did not speak in front of them. But monk, I don't know where the four great elements cease without remainder. And therefore, monk, you have acted wrongly. You have acted incorrectly by going beyond the Buddha and going in search of an answer to this question elsewhere. Now, monk, you just go to the Blessed Lord and put this question to him, and whatever he answers, heart he gives, accept it. So that was actually a nice little say, that the God wouldn't actually tell him because he would lose face. And he eventually comes back to see the Buddha, and the Buddha sort of said, well, you know, it's a silly thing you do that, because you should have come to me in the first place. And he said, what you should have said, they got the question slightly wrong, instead of saying, where do the four elements cease without remainder? You should have said this, where do earth, water, fire, and air no footing find? Where are long, short, small, and great, fair and foul? Where are name and form, nama rupa, wholly destroyed? And the answer is, and this is a phrase which we just heard, the consciousness that makes no showing, nor has to do with finiteness, not claiming being with respect to all. Here, it was translated as, where consciousness is signless, boundless, all luminous. That's where earth, water and fire, air find no footing. There, both long and short, small and great, fair and foul, their name and form is wholly destroyed. With the cessation of consciousness, this is all destroyed. That's the full verse And the key to it is the last word, the cessation of consciousness, this is all destroyed. The verse actually is well translated as the anidasa means it's no longer manifest. It's not a consciousness which is in some strange state that it's not manifested anymore. It's a consciousness which has gone out. It's like the unmanifest flame. A flame is not manifest because it's gone out. It's finished. It's ceased. And where name and form is wholly destroyed, in the Sanyutta Nikaya, in the Nidana Sanyutta, it says very clearly that when name and form cease, so does consciousness cease. So the name and form and the consciousness, they go together, they depend upon one another, it's cause and effect. When one finishes, the other finishes. The anidasana vijnana, the non-manifest consciousness, is the consciousness that has ceased. As it says in the last line. The reason I read this out here, the Digha quote is a fuller quote, and what we really mean in the Majjhima quote, in this 49th sutta, the consciousness that makes no showing is the consciousness which has gone out, which has ceased. Nor has to do with finiteness, not claiming being with respect to all, it's just this consciousness which has ceased. The Nibbana element, cessation, real emptiness, what happens after Nibbana. That cessation, that is not commensurate with the earthness of earth, with the waterness of water. What's the other ones here we got? With the I just going back to the quote here, the waterness of water, the 12th day. With the, what is it called? I can't see it. With the waterness of water, with the fireness of fire, with the air as air, the beings as being, gods as gods, Prajapati as Bhati, Brahma as Brahma, gods as stream regents, gods as stream regents, not commensurate with the gods of fortune glory, not commensurate with the gods of great fruit, in other words, not commensurate with the fourth jhana, not commensurate with any overlord, not commensurate with the allness of all. That cessation, Nibbana. That's what the Buddha's talking about. This is what the Buddha knows, what God doesn't know, what sets the Buddha apart. He's seen Nibbana, the ending of everything. God hasn't seen that. That is not commensurate with these things. And of course, this is beyond God's conception, as sometimes even human beings, when you talk about Nibbana as cessation, people think, how can that be? Sometimes it's hard to accept. This is why we teach the Dharma, to get that paradigm inside of you. Obviously, Brahma was not convinced, so he decided to have a contest with the Buddha. Good sir, said God, I shall vanish from you. Vanish from me if you can, Brahma. Then back of the Brahma, saying, I shall vanish from the recluse Gotama, I shall vanish from the recluse Gotama, was unable to vanish. Thereupon I, the Buddha, said, Brahma, I shall vanish from you. Vanish from me if you can, good sir. Then I performed such a feat of supernormal power that the Brahma and the Brahma's assembly and the members of the Brahma's assembly could hear my voice but could not see me. After I had vanished, I uttered this stanza. So in other words, they did a psychic battle, and even in the psychic area, that the Buddha was actually more powerful than God. And after I had vanished, I uttered this stanza, having seen fear in every mode of being. Instead of fear, sometimes it's better called danger. It's the word bhaya. I know that bhaya, because it's dangerous, it sometimes evokes fear. And even obviously in Indonesian, Malaysian, what's the word for danger? And not just awas, it's like bhaya. Bahaya, yes, that's the Sanskrit form of bhaya. So, having seen fear or danger in every mode of being, and in being seeking for non-being, even the danger of trying to annihilate yourself in being seeking for non-being, seeing danger in both, I did not affirm any type of being, nor did I cling to any delight in being in any of these areas. Now obviously that is completely counter to the idea of a God who delights in being God. At that, Brahma and the Brahma's assembly and the members of the Brahma assembly were struck with wonder and amazement, saying, "It is wonderful, sirs, it is wonderful, the great power and the great might of the recluse Gotama. We have never before seen or heard of any other recluse or Brahmin who had such great power and such great might as has this recluse Gotama, who went forth from a Sakyan clan. Sirs, though living in a generation that delights in being, that takes in delight in being, that rejoicing in being, he has exterminated, annihilated being, together with its root." So, now obviously the Buddha has actually got his message through. Instead of people delights in existing, and enjoying the fruits of existing, which is your sensory experience and your conscious experience, the Buddha does not delight in that anymore. Because you don't delight in it, you're not attached to it, therefore you can let go of being. And the sign of letting go of being is being able to let go of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, to get into a jhana, and let go of even the mind, to go through the jhanas into cessation. The danger or the obstacle is rejoicing in consciousness, so one never will let it go. Now we get Mara comes back into the picture again. He is obviously very upset. Then Mara, the evil one, took possession of a member of the Brahma's assembly. He said to me, "Good sir, if that is what you know, if that is what you have discovered, do not guide your lay disciples or those gone forth. Do not teach the Dhamma to your disciples or to those gone forth. Create no yearning in your disciples or in those gone forth. Before your time, monk, there were recluses and Brahmins in the world, claiming to be accomplished and fully enlightened. And they guided their disciples and those gone forth. They taught the Dhamma to their disciples and to those gone forth. They created yearning in their disciples and those gone forth. And because of that, on the dissolution of their body, when their life was cut off, they became established in an inferior body. Before your time, monk, there were also recluses and Brahmins in the world, claiming to be accomplished and fully enlightened. But they did not guide their disciples or those gone forth. They didn't teach the Dhamma or those gone forth. They created no yearning in the disciples or those gone forth. And because of that, on the dissolution of their body, when their life was cut off, they became established in a superior body. So, monk, I tell you this, be sure, good sir, to abide inactive, devoted to a pleasant abiding here and now. This is better left undeclared. And so, good sir, inform no one else." So in other words, the Mara, I obviously added a bit here just for, again, the special effects. What Mara was saying, he realized that the Buddha obviously was enlightened. And he tried to convince him. He said, "Yeah, you know, people get enlightened from time to time, but just don't teach anyone. Because if you're enlightened, you teach someone, then you get reborn in the lower realm. If you're enlightened and if you're enlightened and teach one, you get reborn in the lower realm. But if you're enlightened and don't teach, you get reborn in the higher realm." Which is obviously, you know, you're enlightened, you don't get reborn at all. But Mara is so concerned, he said, "Okay, if you are enlightened, at least don't teach anyone else." It's interesting, it's like his last resort. When this was said, the Buddha replied, "I told Mara the evil one, I know you evil one, don't think he does not know me. You are Mara the evil one. It is not out of compassion for others' welfare that you speak thus. It is without compassion for the welfare that you speak thus. You think thus, Mara, evil one, those to whom the recluse Gotama teaches the Dhamma will escape from my sphere." In other words, they will go beyond the control of Mara. "Those recluses and Brahmins of yours, evil one, who claim to be accomplished and fully enlightened, were not accomplished and fully enlightened. But I, who claim to be accomplished and fully enlightened, Mara, am accomplished and fully enlightened. If the Tathagata teaches the Dharma to disciples, but if the Tathagata teaches the Dharma to disciples, he is such evil one. And if the Tathagata does not teach Dharma to disciples, he is such.
In other words, it doesn't really concern the Buddha whether he teaches or doesn't teach. It doesn't make any difference to who he is.
If the Tathagata guides disciples, he is such. If the Tathagata does not guide disciples, he is such. Why is that? Because the Tathagata has abandoned the taints that defile, the taints that bring renewal of being, which give trouble, which ripen in suffering and lead to future birth, aging and death. He has cut them off at the root, made them like a palm stump, done away with them, so that they are no longer subject to a future arising. Just as a palm tree whose crown is cut off is incapable of further growth, so too the Tathagata has abandoned the taints that defile, cut them off at the root, made them like a palm stump, done away with them so they are no longer subject to future arising.
So it doesn't matter if he teaches or doesn't teach, he won't get reborn either in a superior realm or an inferior realm. He's completely done away with all rebirth and the causes of rebirth.
Thus, because Mara was unable to reply, and because it began with Brahma's invitation, this discourse is entitled On the Invitation of a Brahma.
It's the Buddha's contest, both with Dhamma and also with this great disappearing act with the Buddha, with God. And sometimes people say, see, how could the Buddha disappear from a god? And I always answer that question. It doesn't actually say in any suttas, but the Buddha would have entered a second jhana realm. In the first jhana realm, those in the first jhana can't even conceive of a second jhana. Even though one accesses one through the other, they're so different in their tastes, in their essence. So that because the Buddha knew a second jhana, he can just enter the second jhana, completely go beyond the experience and the conceptual framework of Brahma. So I always think that's probably what the Buddha did to escape or disappear from Brahma. So, it's the Buddha's contest with God. Interesting sutta. You've got to be careful when you speak this, otherwise you might get a jihad against you, or all sorts of trouble. But this is suttas, this is the Buddha's teachings. This is, it's not something new, this is 25 centuries old. So this is interesting for Buddhists to know. Where does God stand in Buddhism? And this is one of the suttas, which shows you where God stands. Which is why sometimes I remember talking with Dr. K.C. Dharmananda, the venerable chief monk in Brickfields many years ago. And we were complaining, he said, sometimes the Christians go along, not the good Christians, we're talking about the ones who are fundamentalist extremists, going along criticizing the Buddhas and saying, your Buddha, he wasn't a prophet, he wasn't a god, he's a nobody. And I told Dr. K.C. Dharmananda, I think, we should agree with the Christians there. The Buddha is not a prophet. The Buddha is not a god. But he's not a nobody. So we should go around telling people who are cheeky like that to say, our Buddha is a teacher of your god. Not really what might upset them, though. But this is what it says here in the Invitation of a Brahma. The Buddha taught the Dhamma to God. Any questions or comments? Yeah. Get first jhana, not second jhana. That was the limit of what he knew. Correct. Had no access to them. That's all he knew. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah. The Heart Sutra is
Again, not quite the same, because we just had that today and yesterday at the Fo Kwang Shan celebration. The Heart Sutra, the emptiness. What does it actually mean by emptiness? The only thing that emptiness is when things actually stop. It's not like consciousness contains emptiness like a shell, and in its center is nothing. It's just even the shell is nothing also. Because sometimes we think of emptiness like, you know, like a bubble. It's empty inside, but there's a thing on the outside, you know, because, you know, the water film or the soap film of a bubble. But, you know, the whole idea of Buddhism, seeing even the, what's on the surface there, that's empty as well. Because it's empty, there's nothing there, it means that it can completely disappear and end. The question which people always ask about how can something end, we have a concept which is in science, but it's also a very deep-rooted concept, you know, in our way we look at life. The conservation of energy, things can't just disappear. You know, things actually change their form. Energy is never lost. It just transforms into mass or into energy or into some other form, but it never actually disappears. Thinking, how can you have this thing which you call life disappearing, going out? The only way you can have it going out, if there was nothing there to begin with, there can be nothing there afterwards. How can you have an existence of a universe, a cosmos? How can you create something out of nothing? And the obvious answer is, you can't create something out of nothing. There's nothing here now. That which we take to be a floor is just full of holes, it's just a play of energy, and there's such a thing as negative energy as well as positive energy in science. Which means you can have a whole universe come into existence if it's actually nothing now, because it's created out of nothing. You can create nothing out of nothing. And if this world is really empty, then it can completely cease. So sometimes the Heart Sutra doesn't go far enough. Even the Pure Land is empty. Everything is empty, nothing, all gone. So to understand that, you've got to actually see consciousness ceasing. To see just things disappearing. And that's the whole point of meditation. It's not intellectualizing, because the thought can only go so far. And even Brahma can only go so far. You need the experience, the data of the deep meditations, to see these things for yourself. Okay. Yeah. It's just inside the circle, it's nothing there. So if you take away the paper on which the circle is written, there's nothing left there at all. The problem with human beings is that when we have this idea of nothing, we take nothing to be the name of a person. And to illustrate this, I gave this simile in a book which is coming out soon. I quoted from Alice in Wonderland. And in this passage, that Alice had just arrived and was being interviewed or just had a conversation with the White King. And the White King had been waiting for his messenger to appear. And so he asked Alice, "Did you see anybody on the road?" And Alice replied, "I saw nobody on the road." And the White King said, "That's amazing. In this light, you can see nobody. It's as much as I can do to see anybody in this light." So it took nobody to be the name of a person. And a little time later, the messenger arrived. And they asked the messenger, "Did you see anybody on the road as you came?" And the messenger said, "I saw nobody." "Quite right, this lady saw him as well." And said, did anybody pass you?" And the messenger said, "No, nobody passed me." He said, "That means nobody walks faster than you." He said, "Well, I do try my best, sir." And this whole dialogue was very amusing about how we can take nobody to be the name of a person. And this is a problem with many people. When you take like even the non-manifest consciousness here, you take that to be a special form of consciousness, not the absence of consciousness. We take emptiness to be like some subtle state of existence, rather than to be nothing at all. This is a problem with human beings. We cling to things so much. We try and make something out of nothing, literally. I just finished with the story of Aniruddha. This was one of the story of Aniruddha's when he was a young boy, which also illustrates a point. When he was a young boy, he came from a very wealthy family because as a result of some amazing karma he had made in his previous existence, that in this last life he would never hear the word, there isn't any. If he wanted anything, that word would he would never hear, there isn't any. In other words, always have to have it. If it's money, he can't say there's no money. There had to be money, because that was his resolution. In my next existence, may I never hear the word, there's nothing, or there isn't any. And the Pali word for that is nati. Now when we do, there's a few Sri Lankans here, when you do the flower puja on the moonlights here, that's actually one of the resolutions which you make. By the power of this merit, may I never hear the word nati, there isn't any, for the rest of my cycle of rebirths. And that actually comes from the story of Aniruddha. And so, on this occasion, that Aniruddha, as a young boy, was playing marbles with his friend, and he was betting the contents of his lunch basket on the game of marbles, and he kept on losing. And when he ran out of his lunch, his little cakes, he was betting on the outcome of marbles, he told his servant, who was a rich guy, please go home and get some more food from my mother so I can play more marbles. So his servant went home and got another basket of cakes. And he gambled those, and he lost again. So he sent his servant home a second time, go and bring back some more cakes, and his servant brought back some more cakes. And a third time he lost them. So he sent the servant back again. When the servant went home, his mistress, Aniruddha's mother, said, we haven't got any left, we've run out. He called them natty cakes. No, there aren't any cakes left, so tell my son, natty cakes, there's none left. And so he took the basket back to Aniruddha to actually tell him, no cakes left, natty cakes. But because of the resolution of Aniruddha, and because of his good karma, that he would never do without in this lifetime, in such situations, to keep the law of karma, the devas have to get involved. And say, look, we can't sort of allow this to happen. This is against like the law of karma. We have to keep the law of karma. So they actually put these heavenly cakes in the basket without the servant knowing. So they secretly inserted these heavenly food cakes into the basket. So when the servant came, he said, no, natty cakes. Which literally means there aren't any cakes. But when Aniruddha took the basket, there were some cakes there. So he took the word natty cakes to be actually the special type of cakes, like fruit cakes or nut cakes or carrot cake or banana cake. He had never heard of natty cakes before, but when he tasted them, my goodness, they were delicious. And he got very upset at his mother. Mother, why have you never given me such delicious cakes before? From now on, I always want natty cakes. And this is actually what happens when we make something out of nothing. So natty cakes became a special type of cake. But really it meant there isn't any cakes. It's the same with the unborn, the uncreated, the unconditioned. When you create, if you call it that way, it becomes a thing. But that's a bad translation. This really is no conditioned, not born, not created, not an uncreated, but a not created. In other words, a cessation. It's not an unmanifest consciousness, some special form of consciousness in limbo, but consciousness not existing. Not making something out of nothing. Not thinking that nowhere is a place name. Not thinking nothing is something. Is that quite clear? Aha. Okay. Any other questions before we finish off? We get all sorts of range of suttas in here, and that's like an interesting one. Of course, sometimes you've got to be careful. It's not trying to make Buddhism an elitism and like one-upmanship. We're much better than the Christians or the Muslims or whatever. But it's interesting to read a sutta like this to see where does God stand in Buddhism. Now you know. Okay, let's pay respect now. That's right, we're going to pay respect. Arahang Sama Sambuddha.
Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.